Blog Talk Radio. Blog Talk Radio.
From the Boomer and the Babe studio at the Feeding Arizona building in Youngtown, Arizona, it's time for Exploring Faith with John Mayer and Pete Peters. Join them as they explore the role of faith in today's world. How does it play a role in business, politics, lifestyle, families, and individuals? Now here are John Mayer and Pete Peters with today's guest.
And welcome to Exploring Faith on another Wednesday in Phoenix, Arizona. And we're hoping that everybody's hearing us well. And we're going to be going live here with another great conversation. And joining me in studio is Mr. John Mayer, Pastor John Mayer, and also a gentleman by the name of Stan Rowland, a guest of John's and a friend of John's.
Great.
And we're going to go ahead and introduce our guest. And John, why don't you do the honors as always?
Okay, great. Thank you, Pete. We have here with us today Stan Rowland, who is a man who's been in ministry for a number of years, focused on the communities and building up communities. And the name of the ministry that he is running is Community Health Evangelism. Is that correct, Stan?
That's the name for our international ministry.
The international
for what we do here. It's Collaborative for Neighborhood Transformation.
Neighborhood Transformation, right. That was my next item. But you can see the name itself talks about the vision and the desired outcome, and that is neighborhoods transformed. And Stan has done that for well over 30 years now, isn't that right?
Yep, 30.
Yeah.
35 years,
30
of those overseas
in
the last five here.
Right. Well, Stan, let's get at a good starting place. What would you say is the core of neighborhood transformation?
The core of neighborhood transformation is helping people in the community identify what they want to do, both in their own lives and then as an aggregate in the neighborhood, in the community, and then equipping them to be able to go ahead and do that. And it's a holistic ministry, so it's not just focused on teaching them how to get a job if that's what they want, or coming to know Jesus if that's what they want. It's how do you integrate the physical, the spiritual, the emotional, and social together, but starting where people are at.
Right. So it's, what would somebody want, what would they want their neighborhood or community to be like, and then how to get there.
Right. And it's not us telling them how to get there. It's getting them to, number one, look at the history of their community, because in reality, in urban settings, nobody knows anybody. They don't know their neighbors, because as people we've moved around many times. So it's helping them get a vision for what their geographic neighborhood looks like, and then what are their individual dreams for their neighborhood, and then how can you build consensus around 100 or so dreams down to 5 or 6 actionable things that they can do as groups to change that neighborhood.
Right. So if you are the one working with the neighborhood, you're the one who's more or less opening doors, drawing out what's already there. What does it take for a neighborhood to begin to trust you to have you do that with them?
You have to have a presence in the neighborhood regularly. Now, it's best if you come from that neighborhood. That's always best if you live there. But that's not always necessarily the case in underserved neighborhoods. And secondly, people have moved so often, they don't know their neighbor. You may have an elderly person that lived in that neighborhood for 40 years, but they don't know their neighbors because their neighbors have moved so often. So the first step in getting people to begin to know their neighborhood is getting them to walk their neighborhood. One of the key things we talk about is think about the game tic-tac-toe. Your house or apartment is that center spot. And then you've got eight other places around you. And so the question we ask many times is, can you tell me just the names of all the people that live in those eight units around you? Most people can't. But those that do, you say, okay, tell me something about the family that's not visible from the outside. And so that means you can't say the dad drives a red Maserati or that kind of thing. Got right. Something about them. And when you really get to that, nobody knows their neighbors. So the key is to begin to get them to make a practice to actually begin to know their neighbor. And one of the things we encourage people to do is to walk their neighborhood. You can't jog it, or you can't ride bicycles or bikes because you're going too fast. Your focus is as you're walking down the street and you see a guy fixing his car, you go up and say, hi, I'm Stan, I live, or wherever. What's your name? I got three kids. So the key is to begin. The starting point is to begin to get people to know their neighbors. And that means you've got to be doing this consistently.
Do you find that nowadays, in today's modern society, that people don't want to know their neighbors?
Absolutely. Yeah, we're isolationists.
Yeah.
Because, to be honest, sometimes I ask people, I say, how many times have you moved in your adult life? Five times, that's on the low side.
Yeah.
10 times, 20 times, now you're beginning. So in today's society, people move so much that they really say, why bother to know my neighbors? I'm only going to be here for a short time, so therefore.
Is there an element of fear?
Oh, absolutely.
Involved. I mean, I don't know what's going on in that house next door, and I really don't want to know. Okay,
right.
And that's why when you see the news reports of they're talking to the neighbors about the guy that did this dastardly deed. He lived right across the street. They all say, "Well, he seemed like a perfectly nice man to me."
Normal.
Right. He's normal.
He was always a nice guy. He always smiled and said and waved as he went off to work. But it's a lack of people wanting to be involved in interacting with other people.
Exactly. Relationships. If you're going to change a neighborhood, you got to have people having relationships with each other. As an example, I worked 25 years overseas. A lot in the developing countries, Africa, and then worked in Central Asia. But if you take a small village overseas, people have lived in that village for generations. They know each other. They trust each other. They're a similar religion. They have the way they dress, the food they eat. In other words, they hold many, many things in common. But you come to an urban setting, and that really doesn't matter if it's in Nairobi or here in Phoenix. People have moved so much, they don't know each other. So there is no community. And so people do want to be isolated. You're absolutely right. And so but if anything's going to happen, if your neighborhood's going to change, you got to know each other and trust each other.
Well, I know that we live. I live in Sun City proper. It's a retirement community. I'm living in a house that my parents moved into when it was built 35 years ago. My mother's still there, but my mother at 89 years old now says, I don't know any of these neighbors anymore, because of course they've moved on. They've either passed or they've moved on. They've moved out. They've gone back to live with their children or whatever the case might be. And we've been living in that. Deborah and I've been living in that house now for 7 years with her. And I don't know the neighbors. I mean, I know that neighbor next door is the right person to be with that house, and I know that that person is the right person to be with that house. But as far as interacting with them, bringing together and having a potluck dinner, no way. And I don't want to know them. Okay, that's the key. I don't want to know them, and they don't want to know me either. They want to make sure that my dog doesn't bark too much, but other than that, that's the extent of the relationship.
But that's very true. That's not just the Sun City phenomenon.
Sure.
You can go down to Woodland neighborhood right in Phoenix, across from the state capitol, an old neighborhood, and same thing.
Right.
So what you've got to do is find people that want to know their neighbors, that want to do stuff. So one of the things, another thing you do is after you greet people, most of us barbecue, grill, whatever you call it. And we always barbecue in our backyard. Well, if you want to know your neighbors, why not barbecue in the driveway or in the strip of grass if you don't have, you know, a driveway? In front. And then as you're barbecuing your hot dogs or hamburgers, say, hey, come on over, bring your hot dogs. So you begin to do things, and people actually need each other and they want each other, but we really think that we're totally independent. We think we're an island, that we can survive by ourselves, but we really need relationships.
Interesting that you say that. I moved to Phoenix 37 years ago when I first came to Phoenix. And we ended up buying a little house down in Phoenix around 35th Avenue and Cactus. And a tiny little, I guess they're still considered little, 1,100 square foot house, three-bedroom house. And I had occasion to, or my then wife and I had occasion to be on, sitting out on the front lawn on a nice day, bottle of wine, couple of cans of beer. The kids were out there kind of goofing around. And before you know it, here comes a neighbor down the street, stops and says hello. Another one comes across the street, says hello. Hey, I think I'll go get my beer and bring it over. Yeah, bring your beer over. Before you know it, we've got a party.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and the party consisted of a bunch of neighbors and their kids running around, sitting around, shooting the breeze,
mm-hmm.
and having a social drink.
Exactly.
Yeah.
You don't see that anymore.
Because we don't do it. Mm-hmm. We sit in the backyard. We have to invite our neighbors over. If you sit like you did in the front yard and did the same thing today, some people would come around you.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe not as many. And the younger the neighborhood with the kids, the more likely that is to happen. But that's your first step in beginning to see a neighborhood transformed. People got to begin to know each other. A second thing that we encourage people to do, there's an elementary school that kids go to. Now today, not as many as before, but most kids still walk to school. Yes, there's busing and that, but there is a 6 or 8 square block area. And the key is If you're a church, as an example, have you ever gone to the and it's the elementary school, because if it's the middle school or the high school, the geography gets way, way out of hand. But it, just gone to the principal, and particularly in today's economy, and say, how can we bless you? Not go in and say, I've got this great thing for you. And you just then respond to the principal or whoever they have you in, because the school knows probably the most about a neighborhood than any other institution. Why? Because they get funding based on the kids that are there. They get funding from the government for food and for all kinds. They know who the really underserved people are in their neighborhood. They know who the disabled are. They have food plots. They have all kinds of things. And so if you just go in and begin to build a relationship with the school, see, everything is relationship, not with predetermined, I got the greatest thing for you to do, but to build relationships, then you can begin. You got a neighbor in this square block meeting his neighbor, and another one in this square block. Both their kids go to that same elementary school, and another one here. So you begin to move from block, knowing people on your block, to beginning to move to how can we begin to impact? What do we like about this neighborhood? What's the good thing? And that's why we like to get people together down the road to talk about the history, because everybody's moved in and out. And then what I said before.
I see that happening with my daughter and her family. Young family. I got a 6-year-old granddaughter who next year will be going to first grade in the public school. She's currently gone three preschool and pre-kindergarten and kindergarten at a private church-related school. And now her sister, who just turned three, her little sister who's just turned three or is going to be turning three, is getting ready to go into that same preschool arrangement. And although where the school is located, most of the families from that school, preschool, go to an elementary school in that area. Although because in Arizona it's open enrollment and so on and so forth. But my daughter and her husband have decided that the girls are going to go to the school right across the street.
Mm-hmm.
Because they moved into a house that was right close to the school.
Sure.
They did it intentionally in Chandler. And so they're going to go to the school right across the street. And the reason that they want to take the girls across the street is they want the girls to meet more people, to be outside of where they are or they will have been after they've completed that school. And she says, plus we will get to meet our neighbors and
exactly.
know more about our neighbors in that school. So it's happening before my very eyes.
Yeah.
And it is, you're absolutely right, it's happening with the younger families,
yeah.
among the kids.
Yeah. Stan, let me ask you to guide and direct me as a pastor, which I need, because for a number of reasons. One is our church structures, from my point of view and from what I can observe, do nothing to touch the situation that we've been talking about. They're for a different time, a different culture altogether. So that's the only church structure that we have, as it were. It's the one we know the best. It's the one I can find money for. My temptation is go out, hire a youth pastor, have that youth pastor get the best possible program, better than any other church, and see who will come. What is an alternative that you would encourage me to think about that doesn't go along that path, but is a little more neighborhood transformation oriented?
Yeah, you're really talking about a fairly common approach, the attractional approach, whereby you build a program, and they will come. If it's a good enough program.
Yeah. Oh, my. Oh, my.
Sounds
yeah.
like baseball.
Yeah. Okay. Let's move past that as quickly as we can. It's a good thing there's no windows in this room.
There's another type of approach called the missional approach.
Yes, yes.
The
yes.
missional approach is where a congregation, led by their pastor and their leadership, their elders or whatever their structure is, says that we're planted in this neighborhood. We are, our church is not just the people that come into these four walls. Our church are the people that live in this neighborhood. And so they see themselves being a pastor to that neighborhood. And the role for them is to pastor and to be a shepherd to that neighborhood. Now, it's bigger than typically just an elementary school, but if you just work on that, that's, and the whole thing is that the whole concept of what Jesus taught us to do was the integration of word and deed. When we look at the Bible, it talks about that when Jesus first came from the wilderness, and he came to his hometown and he was given the book of Isaiah to read.
Yeah.
Not the book, but the scroll of Isaiah.
Right. Sure. Yeah.
To read, it talked about the Messiah who was going to come. And what was the Messiah going to do? He was going to help to deal with people's physical, spiritual, emotional,
right.
and social needs.
Right.
And so the whole key, when you look at Luke 10:27, love God with all your heart, mind, body, and strength, that's the easy part.
Yeah.
But the second part is love your neighbor as yourself. And loving your neighbor as yourself means you just don't preach to that person or share with them. The spiritual, you reach out to them in all ways of life. And that's really a missional type of church.
Yeah.
Now, a third thing related is house churches. And house churches are small groups meeting in homes. But most of our churches today are commuter churches. Whether it's a small church in the most
yep.
underserved neighborhood
yep.
or the big church. And so people come from all over. So the house church, if it is neighborhood focused, in other words, that you start a church in your house with the idea you want to reach your neighbors, and that's your focus. So it could be a neighborhood focused house church, or in a big, more traditional church, most churches have small groups. And the small groups typically they're all generally in people's homes. And as they're in people's homes, it generally, though, is not geographic. It's more interest-based. And if you can have small groups that are neighborhood-based, and I know a big, big church that focuses that way, that if you want to be in our small group, it's got to be in your neighborhood where
right.
there's a
right.
So these are all different vehicles that can be used if you're going to begin to change. Now, that also requires the pastor to be doing preaching on holistic ministry and encouraging people to know their neighbors, stuff like that.
Right, right. Yeah, well, that's an exciting alternative, I think. And probably turns up people that would not show up at a church on a Sunday morning.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah.
The house church or missional church. As people, there used to be in church growth studies. This is back in the late 70s, early 80s.
Right.
you were taught, and I'm not a pastor, but anyway, I took some of those courses.
It makes you more qualified, probably.
Yeah, I'm a businessman, 25 years in
business.
There we
go, so. That's right.
But they talked about, back then, front door evangelism,
right,
which to bring people in through the front door, and side door evangelism, where you had different activities that people came to. That, in other words, maybe it was an exercise club or whatever. But really, when you're talking missional and what we're talking about, it's not bringing people to your place,
right,
but you going to where the people are. That's why we focus on a neighborhood.
Right.
Does going to where the people are, does that mean that John should get out and go door to door and talk to people?
Getting a middle class person to go door to door is like pulling impacted molars, because most of us dislike intensely, as middle classers, to anybody to knock on their door. Because why? They're trying to sell me something.
Right.
And so getting middle class people in churches to go door to door is way too scary. We've trained people how to do it, but it is hard. So instead, if we can just get them walking the street, just greeting people, just beginning to do stuff in the front, that breaks down that barrier. And so,
yeah, John.
But I'd love to see them walk the street, but most of the people that walk the street are handing out tracts. If you're a church person.
Well, that was my point. I mean, if a church person comes to the door, you know that they've got something in their hand that they're going to be giving you.
That's right.
A promotional piece.
Yes, absolutely.
So that's why I was thinking. Yeah. I was going to ask, does the Episcopal Church have any kind of a pamphlet that you could hand out?
I personally do not have a pamphlet that I could hand out if I went door to door. And the Episcopal Church may, but I haven't looked into it. Actually, I do a little more of what Stan is describing. I go to the gym at the same time every day as much as I can, so I can meet the same people. And I don't tell them what I do, unless I have to wear my collar that day and I didn't have time to change. In fact, I walked in one day with my collar on, and somebody says, "Hey, Halloween is in October." So
okay.
I pull out my phone, put my arm around the guy, and get someone to take our photo. This is still hasn't showed up at church, but people.
Is he going to the gym anymore, though?
Yeah, right. I think he is. Yeah, I don't know.
But is he avoiding time?
Yeah, that's right. Comes at a different time.
Yeah. John always comes at 10. I'm not going to be there at 10.
Yeah. That's right.
I've had people ask me after a little while, "What do you do?" And I say, "Well, I'm a pastor." And without skipping a beat, they will say, "Really? I hate the church." Just like that.
Yeah.
So I'll tell you what I do. I immediately stifle the temptation to say, "I hate the church too."
You stifle
I
that.
I stifle that because they would think I was just being, weird. They already think I'm weird, so I don't want to add to that.
You got to be weird to be a pastor.
Yes, you do. Peculiar is the biblical word, but but usually, if somebody's ready to go at that level with me, we can build a relationship over some time. Yeah.
You know, another very important element when you're working in, and we've been talking about relationships, and that's when I was in business, my business partner used to say, the hardest thing to do is to get the first olive out of the jar. In other words, how do you get started? And that's what you've got to do before you can move on to the next. When middle-class churches work with underserved neighborhoods, whether it's here or short-term trips, they come with a load of goodies. In other words, I can do this for you. What's your need? We'll get a list that's three arms long of needs, with the idea that okay, I've told you my need, now you're going to solve it for me. And in reality, that's what we've done with the government. We fulfill needs. But the key, excuse me, the key is focusing on assets that people have. What skills, knowledge, and ability do they have? And most of those things are hidden. And because, number one, people have moved so much, but even if you've lived there a long time, people really don't know who you are. So one of the things, we focus on assets, because when we focus on needs, the person that asks you what's your need is expected to take care of that need for me. And so it's, and that becomes an IN, that person ends up on the receiving end and makes the middle class person feel very good, because they can help somebody by taking care of a need. But the problem is that it doesn't help the person that you've given the things to. And therefore, the key is we need to build the self-esteem of people, that they are of value. They're a child of God. But they have great value. Sometimes they don't understand that. And how would you feel if you were always on the receiving end of things and you were never able to reciprocate back? You'd feel, I'm useless. And so that then forces you down into an ever-deepening spiral, that instead of helping people begin to take care of their and control of their lives, we actually force them to become more dependent on us. And so the whole focus is focusing on what are the skills, knowledge, and ability that you have, and also asking them the question, what would you like to learn if teaching were done right here? Not at the church, it's wherever, right here. In the elementary school, if you develop the relationship, is a great place to do the teaching then. And you find out some people that want to learn how to balance their checkbook, or how to bake pies if it's a more immigrant type of population, or if it's single teenage moms, how to have a healthy pregnancy and so forth. And then you have, as you've asked around, what are the skills, knowledge, and passions that people have, you find through those questions things that people want to learn. And so you find four people that want to learn how to do their checkbook, or another six, how do I get a job? And you also find, well, there's a person in the neighborhood that's got some experience in that. And then over the years, and we've been doing this for 30 years, 35 years, we've developed a database of participatory lesson plans that are designed for the lay people to use by asking questions and so forth. And therefore, if there isn't somebody in the neighborhood, somebody that's facilitating this happening can then do that simple teaching. So you don't have to be a financial guy to teach on how to balance your checkbook. You don't have to be a job counselor, how do you get a job? You can begin to, lay people are equipped from the church how to do that. So what are your assets? And then bringing people together around what they want to learn, and then equipping them to do what they want to learn. And you'll find people that are interested in Bible studies, as well as people that are interested in getting a job.
Sure. At what point do you introduce the religious aspect, or the church
all
aspect?
All throughout, because you are trained how to share Christ. Now, this program actually came out of Campus Crusade for Christ. Back in the 80s, they had what was called the Agape Movement. The Agape Movement was a Christian Peace Corps. And Dr. Bright wanted to, and he was going to raise up 100,000 young college graduates that had specific skills to go overseas to use those skills. And as part of that, he wanted to integrate curative health care, preventative health education, and evangelism and discipleship. So it came out of that. So the key was everybody has some ability to share their story if they're a believer, and their testimony is the best place to start, what God did in your life. But the whole concept is it's not when you get 6 weeks into this or a month into it, you're listening, because people say, now why are you doing this? But you're really sensitive for the opportunities to share the gospel. Sometimes it's on moral values, honesty, integrity, stuff like that. Old Testament stuff. We worked, we've done this now in about 120 countries of the world.
Wow.
And about 25 of them would be considered creative access countries. And we start, a lot of our moral values is based on Old Testament teaching. And so it's that type of thing. So it's not when, it's throughout. You have to be sensitive to when and where can you share Christ. Now, that doesn't mean that you go in then and stick the four laws under their nose.
Yeah, right.
Which is a very good tool, but it's just being responsive to people.
Yeah.
And people come to Christ not just because I share with him. It's a series, a process. Many people have typically shared.
So people at different stages in this process would, quote, see the light, unquote.
The Holy Spirit would touch them.
Exactly.
And so, then it would go.
And it would be, it is most likely going to be a gradual awakening.
It may be, but sometimes it can be a very quick awakening, depending upon where the individual is in their growth. Because Jim Engels is a theologian and a missiologist, and
yes,
he's got the scale.
By the way, he's an Episcopalian also.
Is he?
Oh, okay. Yes, absolutely.
Well, how can you be all those things and an Episcopalian?
That's another show.
Actually, I spent 5 years in the Anglican Church in Uganda, Church of Uganda, when we lived there.
Did you know Festo, by the way?
Yes.
You knew Festo?
I knew him, sure. Because I was there.
He's one of my heroes, Festo.
Well, he was.
Yeah. Oh, my goodness. That was just an aside for free, Pete.
Thank you. And when we're off air, you're going to have to talk to me about your Festo. I thought you said Pesto, but I...
No, that's a different
culture. Jerry. Festo, Kevin Jerry.
Festo, Kevin Jerry was the Bishop of Kigezi.
Yep.
Okay.
In Uganda.
Yes, yes.
Anyway.
All right, yeah, go ahead. Before we start waxing something
here. Waxing our thighs.
Right. Sam, finish that thought you were having before I...
I'm not sure
where I was. It was a series of thoughts.
Yeah, it was a series of thoughts.
We were talking about whether it was a gradual or whether it was a sudden.
Yeah, and it depends where the person is, because in Jim's continuum, it goes from -6.
Yeah.
I know nothing about God. I don't care about God. To 0, which is I'm neutral. 2, I'm sold out for Jesus, and my whole goal is to make disciples of Jesus, and I do it every day of my life. And people are somewhere on that spectrum. Everybody is.
Yeah. Very cool.
Yeah. I have a question kind of on the other end of the context, I guess you would say. Suppose you're going into a neighborhood, you start making the contacts and relationships, and you start asking those questions, what would you want, and they don't receive it, just don't want to do it. When do you, as it says in Luke 10, shake the dust off your feet?
You play it by ear, but it's it sometimes you have to walk away. Now, is there any specific point, you know, a go, no-go point, I won't continue. You have to be looking for the guidance of the Holy Spirit to say, this place is maybe not the best place to be. Now, it's very, very hard to walk away.
Yeah.
Because you probably put 2 to 3 years in that place.
Yeah. Or more.
Or more. Yeah. And so the other thing is that you can do is begin to look for another neighborhood where maybe some of your people live, if this was a church.
Right.
And start a second, more receptive neighborhood. Now, we also begin to, at the very beginning, begin to equip people. What might, if I had my choice to work, what might be a neighborhood that's got better possibility of succeeding versus falling flat on its face? And there's a series, we do a continuum like the Engel scale, and with a whole series of about 10 different items, simple things.
Is that on your website, that continuum?
That sheet, it's part of the lesson plans that are on the website.
Okay.
But we also have on the website, too, some papers, and I'm not sure if that one is there.
Okay.
But it's the whole idea of how do you, particularly when you're starting new, you need to have success. Now, this is very secular, but success breeds success.
Yeah.
And therefore, if you fall flat on your face in the first place you start, it's going to be harder to overcome that. And so, therefore, you want, particularly if you're a brand new, you know, trying to reach out, you want to pick a choice that has better chance. So that doesn't mean you go to the richest neighborhood. That doesn't mean, but within the spectrum, you can learn how to choose which is a good place.
Well, that's a business concept too. I mean,
yes,
when,
it is.
Some of the things that I wrote with regard to business. And expanding your business and having multiple streams of income in your business.
Yeah.
And you want to grow your business, but you want to grow your business or you want to start your business in the area where you know the most about, where you are most comfortable with, because that increases your likelihood of success. And get the low-hanging fruit first, and then you can climb up into the tree and get the tough-to-get stuff. But you've got to have that success, because it does, success does breed success.
Yeah.
And that's obviously something that's been going on in the business world since time immemorial.
Yeah, I'm a ex-businessman. I spent 20 years in business before I got involved with Crusade and this whole program. And I'm still very much of a reader on leadership and principles. So a lot of the stuff that has been written, Good to Great with Jim Collins, Thomas Friedman, anyway, a lot of guys, we've incorporated some of those techniques. Now, some people would say, well, that's not very spiritual. But you don't throw out the baby with the bathwater.
Right.
There are some very good principles that you can draw from business.
Any number of guests that you brought to this show, John, has had a crossover between their faith-based operation and their faith-based activities, and have been able to relate it directly to business, because there is a correlation there.
That's right.
And the very, I'll never forget this. I'll go to my grave with this. The very first show that we did was when you and our guest, Jason Arendt, had the conversation with regard to closing the deal, making sure that people got the message of what you're selling, you know, and what, I will never forget that. And I sat here and my chin hit my knees when I heard these two people of faith talking about closing the deal. And I went, this is going to be a great series of shows we're going to do, because I can understand that.
Exactly.
You know, and it's amazing, and here it is again.
Yeah, I may have heard this from you, Pete, but I think about you often when this comes to mind. A business is the pursuit of a dream, which is the same as a faith-based organization.
That's right.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yep. What are the things most nonprofits don't do? They cannot articulate what is the cause in a short, very short descriptive way, and they can throw that out like you're fishing, like you're chumming the light by throwing out something that fish will come up to. And what you're looking for is people that are somewhere on the same wavelength. And then you begin to teach the church, okay, so you caught their interest, now what do I tell them?
That's your 10-second elevator speech.
That's right, you got it, the elevator speech. And then we begin to talk to them about when people are showing an interest, then you have to have opportunities for them to do something right then.
Right.
And most people in churches today are doers. I'll go out, I'll do a yard cleanup with a group of people, but no commitment outside of the four walls. But that group's important because they're willing to get outside the four walls. And then the second level is, okay, I've been doing this stuff, but I'm really interested in relationships.
Yes.
How can I begin to build some relationships? And then the third level is the people who say, this cause is the greatest thing since sliced cake. I don't care if you keep helping me. I'm going to do it. And so the churches have to be introduced to some of those processes which come out of the business world.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. Or businesses took them from the faith-based world.
Oh, a lot come from the faith-based.
That's right. Wasn't it Joseph who was the prime minister of Egypt?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, a very business-savvy guy. That's another radio show altogether.
Write all these ideas down. Write them all down. Well, I'd like to thank our guest, Stan, for being here today.
Yeah, it's been great.
I wish we could go on with this, but we're going to have him back. I can see that.
Let's do, because there's the whole idea that we could unpack a little more of, which is called ABCD, which he's been talking about, hinting at asset-based community development and how that works. And Stan, would you come back later? I want to ask you, too, about your vision for what the church could become. That's another whole radio show right there, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
The church can become the church, which is reaching out totally.
Yes. Preach, Stan. Come on.
I'm not going to say what.
Okay.
Right. I'm going to close the show.
Right. Before things get out of hand, right?
Exactly. Well, Stan, thank you very much for coming in today and doing this and having a great conversation with us. And we will have you back again. I'd love to have you back again. I'm sure John would, too.
Yes.
So we'll make sure that you've been listening to the Boom and the Babe show, Exploring Faith edition. And we hope you enjoyed it, and hope you enjoy all of our Exploring Faith shows that we do. We are, of course, bringing you good conversation. Today's conversation was with Mr. Stan Rowland about the role of the church in the communities. And we'll have more to say about that in future shows, so please stay tuned and listen to those upcoming shows and read our blog posts on the Exploring Faith show, which is the first and third Wednesday.
Yes, it is.
Every month.
Yes.
So enjoy that as they come up, and enjoy the rest of the Boom and the Babe shows also. And take a look at boomandthebabe.com. Please sign up for our online magazine, which is Boomer Experience Speaks Boomer Style, with words of wisdom from many of our show hosts and guests, and we hope that you will sign up for that. It's absolutely free. Make sure to make the second half of your life the best half of your life. Have a great day, everybody, and we will be back again tomorrow with another Boomer the Babe show. Thanks. Take care.
You've been listening to the Boomer the Babe show, where we bring interesting conversation to the world. Be sure to follow us on Twitter, where we tweet as Boomer and Babe, and on Facebook as Pete Peters 47. As always, you can friend us on Blog Talk Radio or sign up for our newsletter at boomerandthebabe.com. Email us at host@boomerthebabe.com with any of your comments. Remember, at 50, you're just getting started.